Hi, folks. So my name is Ben Appleby. I'm a program manager in the Exchange Server team. And this session's about deploying Exchange Hybrid. So this is where you have Exchange on-premises and you have some mailboxes in Exchange Online also. The objective of the session is to look at some of the changes that we've made in Service Pack 2 that make that deployment easier, and kind of a play on the how to do it the easy way. The easy way is to not get stuff wrong. But it's specifically, what does that mean? What are the kind of the key couple of things that you need to pay attention to? There's a lot of information that you have to read and understand. You're migrating a messaging platform. What are the kind of the key salient points that you need to make sure you read and understand, get those steps right, and everything else is pretty easy. So we're going to go over that. For those of you that weren't in the migration session before lunch, we're just going to do a quick recap on what all of the native migration options are for Exchange Online. It's just the primary purpose is just to make sure we understand where hybrid sits in among some of the other options. We're going to look at what hybrid is, why we call it hybrid, and then we're going to be looking at what we delivered in Service Pack 2, what those changes are. The main thing is the hybrid configuration wizard, and we'll take a look at the hybrid configuration wizard in action, and then we'll talk about how it works under the covers. Look at how we've engineered what is effectively a new setup engine for Exchange. And then finally, we'll get to that common deployment pitfalls piece, which we'll use the examples from the demo and other bits of the session to talk about how you can get things wrong and the kind of things that trip you up. So first of all, just looking at the migration choices that you have, there is essentially an IMAP migration engine. So if you go to Exchange Online as an administrator into what we call the Exchange Control Panels. That's outlook.com/ECP. There's an email migration button, and the top three choices here are under that email migration option. So IMAP is a way of syncing data from any messaging system that supports the IMAP protocol. Cutover and staged Exchange migration use the Outlook Anywhere protocol to either move all of the mailboxes and all of the directory data in one go, hence cutover. And staged is where we run that same migration tool that will sync the migration data from on-premises using Outlook Anywhere protocol, so that's RPC over HTTPS. But it will be run in conjunction with directory sync so that you can use you can move a few users at a time as opposed to just big bang. They're really good migration options if you don't want to upgrade Exchange on-premises. So ideal if you're migrating from Exchange 2003 or Exchange 2007. The bottom box is what we're going to talk about today. And from a migration perspective, the difference between that bottom box and cutover and staged is cutover and staged use a client access protocol, the same MAPI protocol that the Outlook client uses to access your data. And it essentially creates you a new mailbox and copies the data across. Whereas a hybrid deployment, because we've got Exchange 2010 on-premises, we use the native mailbox replication service between Office 365 and Exchange Online. So the same service that would move a mailbox from server A to server B on premises, we use that service to move the mailbox from server A to Exchange Online. And the difference with that move process is that it's a true move of the mailbox. So we'll sync all the data from the source mailbox up into Exchange Online, and when you're ready to do the switch, it does an atomic switch of mailbox on-premises gets converted to become what we call a remote mailbox, and the target object in Exchange Online gets converted from being a mail-enabled user to a mailbox. So there's at no point is there a mailbox in both locations under normal circumstances. And because we've done a true move, we don't break the Outlook client either. So auto-discover will redirect and reconfigure the Outlook settings, and you get to keep your offline folders and such. So it's a slightly slicker move than, say, staged, where we're creating a new mailbox, copying the items across, and you have to recreate the Outlook profile in order to connect to it. The other thing with a hybrid-based move using the MRS service is you perform the move within the Exchange Management Console. So it's right-click on the mailbox, and remote move request takes you into a wizard where you say source environment on premises, target is Exchange Online, and here are the connection settings. So choosing between these options, particularly the bottom three, so cutover, staged, and hybrid, is really about three things. It's about size of your organization. If you're a small organization running, say, Exchange 2003, doesn't really make a lot of sense for you to do hybrid. Hybrid's going to require at least one Exchange 2010 server in the environment. So if you've got Exchange 2003 on premises, let's just say hypothetically you've got 50 users, they're all running off the same server. Doesn't make sense for a 50-seat migration that you go and add another server. You've basically doubled your servers on premises in order to move to the cloud. It's not a good way of using the tools. Whereas if you look at the other end of the spectrum, where you've got a large number of users, it's probably going to take you some time to move those users. Now, in the gray area between small and very large, that's where staged Exchange migration has its sweet spot. So it doesn't require an Exchange upgrade on premises, but if you deploy directory sync, you can move a few users at a time. For large migrations over a period of time, you generally find that the business demands a higher level of functionality during the move. And that's where you see the push from, you know, a really nice, simple, quick, easy, cheap move that is cut over, to push you into the hybrid bucket where you need to upgrade Exchange in order to provide things like free busy, secure hybrid mail flow, and the archive in the cloud feature. So this is a comparison of kind of the two things, the migration solution that's closest to hybrid, the staged, which is works with Exchange 2003, requires the Outlook Anywhere service to be published to the internet to work. And it also requires directory synchronization. In terms of coexistence features, they're fairly limited. It's basically mail flow and a unified address book. Whereas hybrid, on the other hand, provides a whole host of coexistence features. And it also provides some, what I would say, are true hybrid Exchange modes, such as Exchange Online Archive. So Exchange Online Archive is the notion where you keep your primary mailbox on Exchange 2010 on-premises, and so you manage that and you keep it on-prem, but you provide your users an unlimited archive in Exchange Online. That's a feature that requires a hybrid to be configured as per this session. There's also more details about Exchange Online Archive in Bharat's session tomorrow morning, if you're interested in that. The final thing to point out on the hybrid feature breakdown is that it really falls into, if you take Online Archive out of this, that list of features falls into three areas. Exchange sharing, which is what we use the Federation Trust for and organization relationships, and essentially provides you federated free busy and auto-discover. There's mailbox move, so the online mailbox move feature I referred to earlier that uses the mailbox replication service. And then finally, hybrid mail flow. So that's the secure mail feature. So encrypting, authenticating, and passing the internal message headers for mail flow between on-premises and Exchange Online. And then the final feature, which I'll cover in a bit more detail later, which is centralized mail flow control. So in summary, hybrid offers you the ability, whilst you're straddled between on-premises and Exchange Online, to have a near consistent experience between two users as if they were both still on-premises. And the migrations are simple. You do them online. It uses the native migration moves, native move service that's built into 2010. The things, it's worth pointing out at this point, that there are a couple of things that aren't supported for hybrid. So we do copy delegate permissions. We migrate delegate permissions from on-premises to Exchange Online, but we don't coexist them. And what I mean by that is when you have delegator and delegatee separated, so one's on-prem, the other one's just been moved to Exchange Online, whilst we've preserved the permissions, they don't work whilst the two are on separate Exchange organizations. Once you reunite them in Exchange Online or back on premises, those permissions continue to work again. So that's primarily a scheduling challenge for the migration. If you have users that make heavy use of delegates, the smartest thing to do is to try and migrate them as close together as possible by doing departmental moves. Or you can even look at which users have delegates set and who to using Get Mailbox. There's a grant send on behalf of parameter that you can look at. We don't migrate send as. Send as is an administrator assigned permission that allows one mailbox to send as another. You need to essentially build a report of the users that have that permission set and set it again in Exchange Online ahead of the moves. And as of today, we don't support multiple Exchange orgs on premises. So if you've got a multi-forest deployment on premises, that's not currently supported by Office 365. There is an early adopter program, and there is support coming in the future. And I guess stating the obvious here, but it's the kind of thing that typically, although shouldn't come up in a migration, does come up in a migration of where are my public folders in Office 365, or I've just moved to Office 365 and I can't access my public folders on premises. You really shouldn't find that out when you start moving. You should know that in advance that 365 doesn't support public folders. And what that means from a hybrid context is when you move a mailbox from on-premises to Exchange Online, even if it's only the first or second user, that guy can't access the public folders that are on-premises. So you need to have a strategy for what you're going to do with that data or how users should interact with that data before you start moving them. And finally, we shipped a feature called Address Book Policies in Service Pack 2 for Exchange 2010. That feature is only available on premises today. We are going to be adding it to the service. And what that means, whilst it's not available in the service, it doesn't work for hybrid customers because you need the feature both on premises and in Exchange Online. It will be coming in the future. So these are the server roles that you have to have for Exchange Hybrid to work. So the first point is directory sync. Nothing works in a staged or hybrid move if directory synchronization isn't deployed. We do check when you run the hybrid configuration wizard that you have gone and turned this on. The other thing is that you need a bare minimum of Exchange 2010 SP1 CAS and hub on premises. And if you're using the hybrid configuration wizard, you need Service Pack 2, because that's the service pack that we shipped that wizard in. The other thing to note is that while you don't, strictly speaking, need the mailbox role, there is one specific feature that may require you to deploy the mailbox role on a 2010 server, even though it's not going to host any mailboxes. And that's legacy-free busy support. So if you need to support free busy from an Exchange 2003 mailbox, looking up free busy information for a mailbox that's moved to Office 365, we don't need the mailbox role per se, we need the public folder database bit of the mailbox role. So if you remember, legacy free busy requests are essentially a query to the Schedule Plus folder within public folders. And we've made a change in Exchange 2010 so that we can intercept free busy requests from legacy Exchange mailboxes that are looking up a cloud mailbox. And that change is in the 2010 release, and therefore means in order to do legacy to Office 365 lookups, you need a public folder database on an Exchange 2010 mailbox server. If that exists and the hybrid wizard can detect it, it will go and set up the Schedule Plus folder correctly for you. Now, there's one other server role that commonly gets mentioned with hybrid, and that's ADFS. And strictly speaking, ADFS is not required to do Exchange Hybrid. It's strongly recommended that you do deploy it if you're doing Exchange Hybrid, though. And the reason's fairly simple. It's a usability one. If you're going through all this effort of integrating Exchange on-premises with Exchange Online, and you're providing a really seamless experience for the users there as they transition, if you're not deploying ADFS, it means that at the point at which you move them, your users are getting a new username and password instead of reusing their existing username and password. That becomes a bit of a challenge for a migration. And so, you know, our view is if you're going to the effort to deploy Exchange Hybrid, it makes sense for you to deploy it alongside single sign-on so that not only get an integrated experience within Outlook, but also getting into it, logging onto it, is using credentials that you already know. We typically find customers that want to do hybrid want to do ADFS and vice versa. And then the final point to mention is if you are deploying Exchange 2010 for the purposes of hybrid, so let's say you've got Exchange 2003, 2007 that you're migrating to Exchange Online, the only reason you're putting 2010 in is to support a hybrid-based move. The Exchange part of that license comes with your online subscription. Your authoritative source of information for hybrid deployment steps and understanding documents is here. It's the Exchange Deployment Assistant. If you click on the middle green button, it takes you through a series of questions, and it provides you a tailored set of steps. You know, questions like, are you going to be using single sign-on, yes or no? So let's take a look at what we added in Service Pack 2. Just for a quick show of hands, who in the room used the previous manual hybrid configuration process? A few of you. So there's a couple of you that will understand the top two bullets. So previously, prior to Service Pack 2, hybrid was a manual process of you configuring each of the individual Exchange components to talk to each other. And the skill set that it required was the skill set you would typically have from doing cross-forest migrations of Exchange, which is typically in the larger end of the Exchange deployment spectrum. So it was reasonably complex as Exchange deployments go. And if you were familiar with the manual process, there were two key bits that were quite tricky. The first one is in order to support a shared namespace, so this is the idea that you have a mailbox on-prem and you can have say, for Ben, and you've got a mailbox for Bob in Exchange Online, that both of them can have the same primary SMTP domain. So it's ben@contoso.com on premises, it's bob@contoso.com in Exchange Online, and both work. The way that you make that work in Exchange is that you have two domains. You have the shared namespace, and you have another domain that's routing from one org to the other. And in the previous hybrid model, the guidance always told you to create a service.contoso.com domain. That requirement was often confused. And so what we did in Service Pack 2 is we automatically go and create one of these domains for you. The name suffix for that is mail.onmicrosoft.com. You will probably never see that it exists. It's something that the hybrid wizard automatically picks up. And so from Service Pack 2 onwards, you no longer need to worry about this service.contoso.com requirement. The other kind of very technical and nitty-gritty requirement that we got rid of in Service Pack 2 was this need to provide a unique namespace for the Federation Trust. So the Federation Trust is how Federated FreeBSY works between Exchange organizations and is kind of one of the underlying linchpins for Exchange Hybrid to work. It uses some of the same back-end systems as Office 365, and so there's this requirement that you had to use a namespace for the Federation Trust that was different to any domain that you might register with Office 365. And again, it was a confusing requirement that a lot of customers were getting wrong. And so we've changed the way we create Federation Trust in Service Pack 2 onwards so that we automatically prepend a well-known string to any domain that you specify. So in Service Pack 1, we had this requirement that if your domain was contoso.com, you had to go and create this subdomain called exchangedelegation.whatever your domain name was. So exchangedelegation.contoso.com. Very confusing requirement. What happens in Service Pack 2 is we automatically prepend this string that's up there. Does anybody recognize that string, just out of interest? So it's Exchange 14 rocks oscillated by one character. It's something. It's a string that's been in the product since Exchange 2007. So finally, coming to the hybrid configuration wizard, this is the main thing that we've added. And this is the thing that's automated the deployment process for hybrid. And essentially, from Service Pack 2 onwards, this is your setup engine for configuring on-prem to talk to online. And it replaces all of these manual steps that you had to do before. So this is the new process. And as I referred to earlier, you get these steps right, your life is pretty easy when it comes to deploying hybrid. So first point, and I guess stating the obvious, you need to sign up for Office 365. The hybrid wizard doesn't replace things like domain registration or actually signing up for a tenant. So you need to sign up for an Office 365 for enterprises or for academic tenant. It does not work. Hybrid is not a feature available in Office 365 for small businesses, simply because directory sync isn't available for that SKU, and hybrid is dependent on that. So sign up for a tenant. You then need to register your domains with Office 365. And what that means specifically is accepted domains in your Exchange environment on premises that are being used for primary email addresses on mailboxes you are going to move to the cloud. All of those domains you need to register. And there's the Office 365 Deployment Readiness Toolkit. It's a small download available on Microsoft Download site. If you download that and run it, it will run you a report of all the domains that are being used as primary SMTP addresses. I said before you need directory sync. It's an appliance. You go to the Microsoft Online portal, you click activate directory sync, download the utility, and you run it on a Windows server somewhere within your environment. Every 3 hours, it will sync the delta changes from your Active Directory environment up into Office 365. And then finally, you need Service Pack 2 in order to run the hybrid wizard, so you need that deployed on both CAS and Hub somewhere within the environment. One of the questions that commonly comes up is whether this needs to be dedicated servers for hybrid, and the answer is no. If you have Exchange 2010 deployed already, then you can just use your existing environment, and it's really just a matter of making sure you have the right service pack level. If you've got an old version of Exchange, and the only reason you would ever deploy 2010 is as a bridge into Exchange Online, then I guess you probably are going to be deploying dedicated servers. And then this is the step that usually causes the problems. That CAS and Hub role need to be published to Exchange Online. I'm going to take a look in detail at what can go wrong here, but it's the usual stuff. You need your firewall rules configured correctly. You need your DNS entries configured correctly. And you need valid certificates. So this is the Exchange Management Console. It's the Service Pack 2 Management Console. Before I mention the hybrid bit on the right-hand side, on the left-hand nav bar, you can see something that we added in Service Pack 1. At the bottom, there's an Exchange Online node. As part of adding multi-forest support to EMC, we also added the ability to look at the Exchange Online tenant from within EMC. You need to add, right-click, add forest, and select Exchange Online and enter some credentials in order to make that connection before you then go to the hybrid piece. In Service Pack 2, we've added a dedicated tab at organization level for the hybrid configuration object. That's it there. And when you double-click on it, you get the hybrid configuration wizard. And it's an end-to-end process to cover all of those things that I referred to earlier in the previous slide that were previously manual steps. So let's take a look. So this is my own demo environment, contosocars.com. And so as you can see, there's the Service Pack 1 experience on the left-hand side. And so I can go and look at the two sides. And also have the hybrid configuration object. So when I double-click on that, the first page, this text is basically stating exactly what I had in the previous slide. There are a series of prereqs that you must meet before you run this wizard. So the first step is it's going to take credentials off you for Exchange On-Premises and for Exchange Online. These two creds need the organization management role from both sides. So we cache the credentials in Windows Credential Manager, providing you tick the box. And when I click Next, slight pauses as it attempts to create connection to both sides to validate that the credentials are correct. In designing the wizard, we've attempted to validate that the prereqs are done as you go. So one of the prereqs was that you've registered your domains with Office 365 before you come in here. So when you click the Add Domain button, it's showing you a list of domains from on-premises, but it's filtering them based on the domains we see in Office 365. So if I was to just quickly go behind the scenes and look at what domains are actually on-premises, we'll see that there's a whole bunch of extra domains there that you're not seeing in the wizard. The reason, like liveid.excoexistence.com, it's a domain I had years ago, no longer using, don't care about it, and that's why I didn't register it with Office 365, and it's therefore why it doesn't appear in this list. If you haven't registered any domains with Office 365, you get an error message saying go to the portal and do that. The next step is about creating the domain proof of ownership tokens for the Federation Trust. Unfortunately, this is a separate set of domain proof tokens to the ones that you will have created when you registered the domain with Office 365. So before you came to the Hybrid Wizard, you registered your domain with Office 365 and you proved that you owned it. When you run the Hybrid Wizard, you're also registering the domains on the Exchange Federation Trust and with the Microsoft Federation Gateway. They're two separate systems, and you need to prove ownership separately for that. So the objective of this page is to hit Control-C, open up Notepad, and take out the record value here and create it as a DNS text record in public DNS. Now, I've already run a trick just for the purposes of the demo, and I've already done this with this domain, which is why it says provisioning status active. Normally, you would see this as pending, and you would check the box here to confirm that you've gone and created this DNS text record. Next, you need to choose which of the Exchange 2010 Service Pack 2 client access servers and hub transport servers you're going to use from on-premises. So the client access server that you choose here, we do two things with. Firstly, we enable the mailbox replication service proxy. That's the thing that Office 365 will connect to in order to move a mailbox. It's off by default, and the Hybrid Wizard will enable it on any server that you specify in this list. The other thing that it'll do is it'll check that you've got a public certificate bound to IIS on this server. It will throw a warning if you don't. It won't error, it will throw a warning. And then the next piece is choose the hub transport server that you wish to use for hybrid mail flow. So hybrid mail flow uses a slight modification of the SMTP protocol and therefore will only send between Exchange and FOPI direct. The server that you specify here will have a receive connector created on it to accept email from Forefront Online Protection for Exchange. And it will be listed on a send connector that sends all email from on-premises to Exchange Online. So on this page, we're configuring, although it sometimes throws some people, what we're doing here is configuring the inbound and outbound connectors on the cloud side. So although you're looking at some UI from the on-prem piece of Exchange, this bit of the Hybrid Wizard is getting the settings right for mail flow in and out of the tenant. So in the same way that Exchange on-premises has the notion of a receive connector and a send connector, Exchange Online has the notion of an inbound connector and an outbound connector. They are essentially the same thing, just slightly different names. And for the inbound connector, the thing that is going to receive email from your environment on-premises, you need to, in order for FOPI to pick the right connector, you need to tell it which IP addresses you're going to be sending from. So the IP addresses that you enter here should be the public IP addresses on emails you send outbound from Exchange on premises to FOPI. So it should be the public IP addresses of your Exchange 2010 hub transport server. And then this bottom box is controlling where Exchange Online will send email for on-premise mailboxes, or if it's sending an email to on-premises. The reason why we don't just use DNS MX records is so that you can move the DNS MX record over to FOPI. What you should enter in here is just a DNS FQDN, which can either be a load balancer for a number of hub transport servers, or if it's a small deployment or a test lab, it can just be a single hub transport server. So in this case, I'm going to use mail.contosocars.com. And then the final page is two things. The top box is a list of public certificates that you could use for TLS negotiation. So this is when you're sending an email, an encrypted email, between on-premises and Exchange Online, we authenticate each party. So we authenticate that FOPI is presenting the Microsoft FOPI certificate. And when Exchange On-Premises sends to Exchange Online, we want to do the same authentication. And this is where you choose which cert you want to use for that encryption and authentication. In this particular example, I only have one cert available. The way this list is produced is it takes the servers, the hub transport servers you specified on the servers page, and it looks for certificates that are on each server, because obviously if you've only got the certificate on one out of the three servers you want to use for mail flow, only one in three mail messages is going to work. So we need to ensure that you've got the same certificate on every server. We're then checking that it's not a self-signed certificate and that it was issued by a third-party CA, i.e. a public certificate authority. If you don't meet those requirements, it's not going to work because Exchange Online needs to see it's come from a certificate authority and therefore it's actually representing something that it can trust. And then the final choice is between the default of just secure mail. And secure mail means we encrypt all email using TLS. We authenticate both parties, so encryption, authentication. Once you have those two things in place, we also pass some internal mail headers that give your users that experience that the mail message hasn't left the Exchange environment. They see the from and the to bits of the mail message and their rules all work as normal. So that's the top box. That's the default setting for hybrid. The bottom box is secure mail plus a mode we refer to as centralized mail flow control. And what that controls is where Exchange Online sends and receives email in order to communicate with external recipients. With it on, Exchange Online will send all emails via the on-premises Exchange environment in order to send it on to an external recipient. And the reason why you might turn this on is if you have some compliance requirements, such as a DLP, or a data leakage prevention service on-premises that you're not ready to decommission or you want to keep. By turning on centralized transport control, you're forwarding all email from Exchange Online to on-premises so that that other system can intercept that message. So it's only really designed for compliance scenarios, and certainly our recommended default setting is that you just allow emails to be sent direct. So if you choose the top box, what it means when Exchange Online needs to send an email to an external recipient is that it just sends it direct. It doesn't send it via on-premises, which is a more convoluted mail flow path. So that's it. There are two commandlets that it goes and executes here. There's set hybrid configuration, which is effectively just recording everything that you've just told it. So you can see all settings that I've just plugged in. And then update hybrid configuration, which is what we're going to spend some time looking at now. Now, update takes a bit of time. So whilst that's running, we're going to go back to the slides and take a look at what's going on underneath. So all the clever stuff's inside this commandlet. We call the commandlet the hybrid configuration engine. It's essentially set up for the cloud. And so in this next slide, we look at the things that this engine does. So the first part is that we read the hybrid configuration object. So the things that you answered in the wizard, the questions that you answered in the wizard, are recorded on the hybrid configuration object using set hybrid configuration. So that's your desired state. That's how you would like hybrid configured. It contains things like, I want free busy on, this is where I want email to be sent from Exchange Online and such. Over here. So we read that desired state. We then create a remote PowerShell session to both Exchange on premises and to Exchange Online. We use the same API, same commandlet calls that you have access to. These two run spaces are run under the context of the credentials that you provided on the first page of the wizard. So once we've connected, we read the current state of both sides. So we're reading the domain objects, organization relationships, if they exist, and so forth. And once we've got that topology view and a view of how the current state is, we calculate from that what's missing. So you have desired and current, and then a calculation process that says, from that, I need to execute these series of commands to make the output match the desired. One of the key things, and so from that view of how the hybrid configuration engine works, we're going to walk through how what it's actually doing to create the organization relationship. The organization relationship is the thing that handles federated free busy and all that good stuff. And then we're going to take a look at how it configures the mail flow connectors. And it's important to use that how the engine works as a backdrop, particularly to organization relationship creation. There's an important point that the engine is connecting to both sides to configure them. So if you were to see an error come from the configuration engine, it could be that the error exists on premises, it's running the commandlet on premises, or it could be that actually it's running it in Exchange Online. And the number one cause of hybrid wizard failures is down to this commandlet, get federation information. Get federation information is auto-discover for organization relationships. It's a federated auto-discover process. And you use the output of this commandlet to create an organization relationship with the correct settings. So it's run in Exchange Online for the organization relationship that points at Exchange on premises. It's also, although it's not shown in this diagram, it's run on premises to get the cloud settings to create the organization relationship on-prem that points to the cloud. However, that bit never fails, or very rarely fails, because cloud settings are much more deterministic to discover. We've done some stuff to make sure that that's the case. Whereas the commandlet running in Exchange Online needs you to have correctly published your Exchange environment on-premises. So when that commandlet executes, the Exchange Online CAS server is going to go off and get a delegation token. So this is, it talks to Microsoft Federation Gateway, it hands its Exchange Online certificate, security certificate, and says, I need to act on behalf of this Exchange Online customer. And the MFG, providing it, authenticates the certificate and the request. It passes back a delegation token that the Exchange Online CAS server can use to communicate to on-prem. At that point, it needs to find where on-premises is. So it does a DNS lookup for autodiscover dot whatever the domain name was. And providing that DNS record exists, it then attempts to go and access the autodiscover web service. And it gives it that delegation token. And providing Exchange 2010 on-prem can authenticate that token. It provides back the autodiscover details and everything's good. So where does this fail? The first thing is you haven't created, it can fail if you haven't created the autodiscover dot domain name DNS record. That very that second lookup that we make where we're trying to find on-prem just fails. And the next piece is you don't have your firewall rules configured correctly. Now, this can be a whole variety of things. It can be the IP address that's in DNS simply doesn't have a firewall rule, and the firewall's not going to let the request through, period. The more common issue that I see, in fact, actually I asked for a show of hands, how many people use Threat Management Gateway? Yeah, which is pretty typical for Exchange customers. It's a preferred firewall technology. TMG has a really good feature in it called pre-authentication. And in fact, it's turned on by default in the Exchange Publishing Wizard. Pre-authentication assumes that you're going to be handing over a username and password pair as credentials. Exchange Federation doesn't. It's actually at a HTTP connection level. It's anonymous. It's within the session. It's handing a signed, digitally signed token, encrypted and signed token. And so if you have pre-authentication turned on TMG for all of your URLs, then it will fail. Exchange Online attempts to connect as an anonymous connection, and TMG throws the connection away. And it could be a difficult issue to troubleshoot because you're looking at your Exchange server on-premises and you don't see anything. It's actually failing in the step ahead. The fix for that, by the way, is that you should create a rule with the paths that hybrid, the web service paths that hybrid will connect to, which are in the next slide, and you create them in a higher rule in the rule set, and you turn off pre-authentication for those specific paths. As you can see here, there's some very specific paths, /WS security, that we're going for. So you just exclude those from pre-authentication. So firewall. And then finally, there's a number of different issues that you can create in terms of where the firewall rule's going. It needs to be Exchange 2010, Service Pack 1 or higher. If you're using the hybrid configuration wizard, it really needs to be Service Pack 2, although we don't hard block you. And the common mistakes here are the server does not have a public certificate. So you get all the way through, and it's an untrusted SSL connection, and it stops there. Or it's not, it might be a client access server, but it's not Exchange 2010. It's an Exchange 2007 client access server. In order to use hybrid, the external autodiscover DNS record for your domains needs to be moved over to Exchange 2010. And the simple reason is 2010 is the version that we shipped Federation Trust. If we try and send a delegation token and an anonymous autodiscover HTTP connection with a delegation token inside it to 2007, it's not going to understand it. So this is a brief walkthrough, about four slides, on how hybrid mail flow is configured, and it also then draws out those kind of key points of the things that can go wrong. And so from At a high level, there are four main pieces to hybrid mail flow from a configuration standpoint. There's a send connector that we create on premises. Now, I mentioned this coexistence domain thing earlier that replaced this previous guidance where we asked you to create a service.contoso.com domain. We now automatically create you a tenant name .mail.onmicrosoft.com domain. When we find that domain, whenever the hybrid wizard runs, we find that domain within Office 365, we go and create a send connector that is scoped to that address space. Any mail flow from on-premises to Exchange Online is going to go to that domain. So that's how we do our forwarding. So send connector is created. The IP addresses that you gave us in the wizard are used to scope the inbound connector in Forefront Online Protection for Exchange. So the public IP address of your Exchange 2010 Hub Transport server on premises is used to scope that inbound connector. And then there is a similar reverse flow. The outbound connector from FOPI is scoped to the domains that you added on the first page of the hybrid configuration wizard. Sorry, second page, just after credentials. When you add domains in there, those domains are used to scope the outbound connector. So it effectively means in this without centralized transport control mode, if you're a mailbox in Exchange Online sending to a user and they their domain is one of your own domains, it's going to hit this outbound connector and get forwarded to on-premises. If, however, you're sending to a user that isn't one of your own domains, you didn't go and pick it in the hybrid configuration wizard, and in fact it's just an external recipient, it's just going to go straight out to the internet and be delivered in the normal way. And then the final piece is a matching receive connector for FOPI to connect to. Whenever you run the hybrid configuration wizard, we download the IP addresses for FOPI, which change rarely. And in fact, the IP addresses that are up there now are published some way ahead of when any plan changes are. So the hybrid configuration wizard downloads the set of IP addresses for the FOPI service, and it sets that as the scope for the receive connector on premises, completing the flow. And so what all of that means is that as an external recipient sending in, you can have your MX record pointed wherever you like. You can have it pointing at Exchange, Edge, Hub, third-party system, third-party hoster, all perfectly fine. You can also choose at any time to change that MX record and point it at FOPI. And this is a common area of confusion. The reason why this works is because when you were running the wizard and we asked you for the outbound FOPI outbound connector, where would you like us to deliver email? And we ask for an FQDN, and we don't rely on DNS MX records that might be out there. It's so that you can do this switch. Your MX record points wherever you would like to deliver external email. The FQDN you put in the wizard is where you would like internal email from Exchange Online to Exchange on premises to be delivered, and therefore they can be two separate places. So let's take a look at this with the centralized transport control feature. The on-prem side of this puzzle stays the same, exactly the same, no changes whatsoever. The FOPI side of the changes is different. First of all, because this is a compliance scenario, we want to stop people from being able to email direct into the tenant. The idea is if you're having this enabled, you want all email, inbound and outbound from Exchange Online, to have to go via some messaging systems that you have on premises. So the inbound connector that we create, we make exclusive for the tenant. So the only way that you can get an email into that Exchange Online tenant is through the connector that we're creating. And that connector will only accept email from your IP addresses that you fill in the wizard and the certificate that you selected on the last page. If you don't present the certificate for negotiation and send from one of those IP addresses, you can't send email into Exchange Online, that particular Exchange Online tenant. The second piece to that puzzle is we want to make sure all email from Exchange Online tenant gets sent to on-premises. And the way that's controlled is just by the recipient domains or the address space scope of that outbound connector. Instead of it being your list of domains, it's just **. It's all domains outbound from Exchange Online mailboxes in that tenant gets sent to the FQDN you put in the wizard. And then the receive connector side is the same. So that's how centralized transport control is configured. Let's look at what that means from an external delivery perspective. Slightly muddier than the previous secure mail scenario. So first of all, the same initial requirement is the same. The external recipients can send their email to wherever you like. So if you've got a third-party filtering system on-premises, hosted provider, or you're delivering into Exchange, all of those options work just fine. The only thing that you need to think about a little bit harder is if you want centralized transport control, so that's in and outbound of Exchange Online, has to go via on-premises, and you want FOPI to do your filtering. That's a maybe, and it depends on whether you've signed up to FOPI as a standalone service to do your filtering for on-premises before you tried to add Exchange Online, because you've essentially got two distinct requirements. You want FOPI to protect your on-premises environment, so the thing that filters and handles all external mail flow, and separately, you want to control the in and outbound to Exchange Online. And the way you do that is you have two FOPI tenants. You have a standalone one that you set up before you deploy Office 365. And then when you sign up for Office 365, we will auto create you another one that handles this communication. So if I was to draw this out fully and to turn that question mark into a tick, you would have two FOPI boxes at the top. One for your on-prem external email and one for the hybrid piece. Providing you've created FOPI standalone before you start your hybrid deployment, there are no special steps required here. The hybrid wizard and the commandlets that we execute in the cloud understand this configuration. So let's take a little look at some of the deployment issues. Just recap what we discussed. CAS publishing issues are by far the main problems that I see our support guys deal with and that I see customers struggle with. It's all the same kind of classic stuff that you'll have been dealing with as an Exchange administrator before, and tools like testexchangeconnectivity.com really are your friend here. The only word of caution I put around test exchange connectivity in this context is that there are certain errors, certain configuration issues that it can't pick up at the moment. It doesn't support federated auto-discover lookups. So you can use testexchangeconnectivity.com to check that you've got auto-discover published to the internet with a trusted certificate from a client access server. But it can't tell whether that client access server is 2007 or 2010. So you may get a green tick from testexchangeconnectivity.com and you fail here. And that's because there's an extra requirement that the auto-discover record needs to resolve to 2010 SP1 or higher. and it needs to, the firewall must have pre-authentication turned off. Those two conditions can't be detected through test exchange connectivity. These are the VDERs that you need to exclude from pre-authentication. And in fact, if we just take a quick look at my environment, this is my TMG server. And so I have a rule for Outlook Anywhere, which I created using the Exchange Publishing Wizard. To create the hybrid rule above, all I did was copy and paste. And providing your Outlook Anywhere rule is working just great. Copy and paste is a really good way of getting the rule in place. And then you go in, you edit it. The things that you need to change are the paths, as per the paths that I put on the deck. So these paths are the MRS proxy, Exchange Web Services, and then there are two VDERs for auto-discover. You need to turn pre-authentication off. So if pre-authentication is on, this will say authenticated users only, or authenticated users. You need to change that to all users. And then finally, authentication delegation. You need to set to the second option. And if you've got delegation turned on, it will be one of the basic or other authentication choices. SSL offloading is supported by CAS, is supported by Hybrid Configuration Wizard, is not supported for the MRS proxy. So in that guidance, there's no steps for the MRS proxy because it doesn't support SSL offloading. Just one to watch out for. It's a bit of a gotcha. And then hybrid mail flow, we didn't touch on all of this. I mentioned the fact that the TLS connection must terminate on an Exchange server. The exact requirement is that it must terminate on an Exchange 2010 Service Pack 1 or higher hub transport or edge transport server. The reason why we need to terminate it on Exchange is there's an extension to the SMTP protocol that flows between FOPI and Exchange on-prem. It only gets, this extension only gets used if when FOPI is attempting to dial into on-premises and send an email, it advertises itself as Exchange. So I've had a lot of customers that don't necessarily want to terminate the connection on Exchange and have attempted to put third-party devices in between. Mailflow will work, but the mail messages from online to on-prem will be seen as unauthenticated, which is something that will cause problems for your users. And then the MX pointed to FOPI with centralized transport control. You've got to have FOPI standalone tenant created separately in advance of your Office 365 deployment. And the third point is something that's fixed in Rollup 1. We added support for wildcard certificates for TLS negotiation in Rollup 1 for Service Pack 2. So this is a recap of, you know, we looked at what Hybrid Configuration Wizard is, what the engine does, and what the common pitfalls are. If you can tick off these common pitfalls that are in this deck, configuring hybrid truly is easy. These are some other sessions that I'd recommend that you go and see. They're all the remaining Exchange sessions for the conference. The top one, which is Bharat tomorrow morning, is covering Exchange Online archiving. So that's a feature that builds on top of Exchange Hybrid. It's a very cool feature where you can keep your primary mailbox on-prem and your archive in the cloud. So he'll be covering that tomorrow. And at that point, we've got a few minutes left. Are there any questions? Yes, sir. Can you speak up a bit?
Myself,
So the question or the point was that you've done a number of hybrid deployments and you've hit the you've done two and you've hit some of the issues described in this session, but you've hit one other issue, which is the creation of we automate the creation of the inbound connector in FOPI, and the TLS negotiation didn't work out of the box. So that was your point. It was specifically opportunistic TLS. I'd like to follow up with you because out of the box, all connectors do opportunistic TLS. There aren't actually any settings on there to control that. I don't doubt that you may have had some issues, but I don't know whether that's necessarily the cause of the problem. So I don't know. We should talk afterwards. There's a question right at the back. Yep.
I think there is a license and cost implications. I understand that we have all the users of FOPI. And we need licenses for all the users. Typically, I think you would do it at the end of the migration.
Yep. That's a very good point. So the question was about whether you, when you move the MX record over to Exchange Online, what are the licensing implications? And you're absolutely right. That FOPI, as an entity, needs a license for every mailbox that it's protecting. And so you get a license with every Office 365 mailbox. So let's say you've got 100 users. You've put 50 of them in Office 365. They've got 50 FOPI licenses. If you want to move the MX record across, you need, rather than a full-blown Office 365 license, the bare minimum you need is another 50 FOPI licenses to cover the mailboxes you haven't moved yet. Once you've moved them, you can get rid of those FOPI licenses. So that's a very good point. Thank you. There was a question down front. Yes. So the question here is how do you handle having lots of domains but only having an auto discover record for one of them?
Is it because it costs money actually to do more records actually? You know, it costs money actually because I have to purchase a sun certificate, you know.
Yeah. It's a good question. So as it stands today in Exchange 2010, the hybrid, so there's a couple of different parts to this. First of all, forgetting hybrid and the hybrid configuration wizard for a moment, Outlook, when it attempts to do an auto-discover, is going to use its primary SMTP address for the user to find the auto-discover endpoint. And if you do that inside the corporate network, it's going to use service connection points. And if you use it outside the corporate network, it's going to use auto-discover DNS records. And so even when you move a mailbox to Exchange Online, it's still tracing that primary SMTP path. And the design for hybrid is that those records point to your Exchange system on premises, and you are then forwarded to Exchange Online. You only move the auto-discover records over at the very, very end. And the reason is because it's very quick and easy to do an auto-discover redirect, and it gives a locked configuration so that you have some predictability about the move. So you can move the MX record at any point. You should leave the auto-discover record pointed to on-prem, unless you really, really, really know what you're doing and you're happy to start mucking around with those auto-discover redirects. So, primary SMTP address, the Outlook client's going to go to on-prem and then it's going to be redirected. So, the bare minimum, you're going to need something. If you support users off the corporate network configuring Outlook, you're going to need something, an A record or a C name, in order for Outlook to find the auto-discover endpoint. So, that's kind of the first point. The second part to it is when the hybrid configuration wizard runs, As I pointed out in that scenario where we're creating the organization relationship and we're running Get Federation information against one of those hybrid domains, we pick the first domain in the list. And that first domain in the list must have autodiscover.domainname DNS record published, and the endpoint must have that DNS domain on the certificate. The other domains don't need to be there. So that's an important clarification point. Just repeating for everybody else, if I use an SRV record for Outlook, which is where you can have a single DNS record, lots of entries pointing to a single endpoint, and it saves you having the endpoint having to have every DNS domain on it, so reducing your SAN cert costs. So that works for Outlook. It does not work for the Get Federation Information Commandlet. It doesn't support it as it stands today. That's right. The thing that you need to watch out for is that the hybrid wizard, every time you run it, is going to pick the first domain in the list. So if you add a whole bunch of domains that shuffle the list around, you may find it's picking a different domain the next time. Any other questions? Go on, one more. It is supported, but it's a FOPI standalone scenario. So you would get that working with FOPI before you signed up for Office 365. Correct. It's not supported with FOPI that comes with Office 365. Ah, one more question. So the thing that we added recently to the remote connectivity analyzer, we added the SSO test. There's also some tweaks to the way we do capture passwords so that you don't have to re-enter the capture every time you're doing a test. It will remember for 30 minutes. But I don't think there's anything specific for hybrid in the latest release. We are, you know, there will be changes, but not today. So anybody who doesn't know, there's MEC later in the year. If you haven't had enough exchange from this conference. And these are the resources. And then finally, please submit an eval. Thank you very much.